Hello and welcome to the Home is Where the Hearth Is podcast in the Inner Sanctum. And last week we did Julius Caesar, a little summary on Julius Caesar. And this is sort of paralleling a course I'm giving to some friends or an organization in Chile, in South America, called Red Cultural or CultureNet. I've just been teaching literature to them on Friday mornings. To this group for a while now, probably over a year, and it's ongoing. And the course I'm currently teaching is Elizabethan Shakespeare. And then the next course I'll be teaching, we're going to have a bit of a summer break or winter break for them, as they're in the Southern Hemisphere. And then we'll be starting again in August with Jacobean Shakespeare. But anyway, so the fourth and final class, the little module courses are just four class sessions each. But this fourth and final class is going to be in Shakespeare's play Twelfth Night. So I thought I'd do a dummy run, if you like. I'm going to do an hour lecture for Red Cultural, but I'm going to maybe just, well, if I don't get through it all, we'll continue next week. But I'm looking to just summarise the play here. So, without further ado, Shakespeare's Twelfth Night. First of all, you know, there's some dispute about when it was first performed. Some people say it was on Twelfth Night itself, the Feast of the Epiphany, or the Eve thereof, in 1601, when there was a Tuscan, Italian duke, the Duke of Orsini, visiting Queen Elizabeth's court, and rather grotesquely, the very elderly Elizabeth, coated no doubt in half an inch of white makeup to cover her age, danced a galliard in front of her guest. I'm sure everybody applauded politely, but she's only two years away from, well, less than 2 years away from her death at this point. It can't have been a pretty sight, but that's another matter. So perhaps it was performed at court during this royal visit. Certainly there's an obvious more than a coincidence between the visit of the Duke of Orsini over the Christmas period of 1600 and 1601 and the character of the Duke of Orsino in Twelfth Night. Although, as some critics have said, some historians have said, and I tend to agree, it would be somewhat unlikely that they would risk offending the Duke of Orsini by presenting a character called the Duke of Orsino in a comedy, especially as, I mean, the Duke of Orsino is not, he's not a bad person, but he's certainly not anybody to write home about either. Like most of the other characters in this rather flippant play, he's rather flippant and shallow. No real depth to any of the characters really in this play. That's not what it's about. It's a farce. It's very funny, and there's some serious commentary on the politics and religion of the day in the depiction of Malvolio, who's a thinly disguised Puritan. We'll get to that in a moment. So some people say Patrick performed in Twelfth Night the following year, 1602. What's really weird as well about this is around the time that Shakespeare is writing Hamlet. And one can't think of a play more different from Hamlet than Twelfth Night, in the sense that Hamlet, of course, is very dark, very deep, a great perception of character, many characters in that play that have real psychological, spiritual depth, both in the good and bad sense, and dark and light sense. And yet this play, Twelfth Night, appears to be written around the same time. I suppose we might say in England, I'm not sure if it's an idiomatic phrase used over here, horses for courses. In this play, Shakespeare's basically planning to amuse, but it doesn't stop him making some serious comments about the threat of Puritanism, which we'll get to in just a moment. Okay, so that's the historical background and context. The other thing that happened, as well as Hamlet, by the way, in the background, sometime around this time, we'll put it this way: if it was performed on Twelfth Night, 1601, in other words, at the beginning of 1601, it was only literally a few weeks, about 6 or 7 weeks, I think, before the Essex Rebellion. Now, the Duke of Orsini was a friend of the Earl of Essex, so it's ironic that he's being paying court to Elizabeth I. At the very time, he presumably, well, I don't know how involved he was, but certainly was a friend of the Earl of Essex, who's about to rise up in a rebellion against Elizabeth. And one of his key supporters was the Earl of Southampton, Shakespeare's patron. And it's quite clear from the anger of Hamlet that that Shakespeare shares the Earl of Essex's and the Earl of Southampton's disdain for Elizabeth and the Elizabethan regime and the Elizabethan government of the Cecils. So all of this is going, all this darkness, and this play was either written just before the Essex Rebellion or within a months of after it. So either way, there's this really dark backdrop, and yet the play itself is really very light-hearted, very light, levitas as opposed to gravitas. Okay, so the most important character from the point of view, well, not just of me as a Catholic, and as you, predominantly, I presume, Catholics, but even from the critics, that the most important character is Malvolio, and if you like, the subplot about Malvolio. He is specifically described as a Puritan in the play, the play lampoons his Puritanism, his lack of humour, his vanity. And really what we have to remember about the depiction of Puritans by Shakespeare is that he knows that his audience is as opposed to Puritanism as he is, for a very simple reason, that the Puritans hate the theatre, they hate music. And this is the play, by the way, that begins with the Duke of Orsino's words, "If music be the food of love." That's certainly not something the Puritans believe. The Puritans hate music. They hate the theatre. They were working to have the music of Gregorian chant and polyphony removed from the Anglican liturgy. Queen Elizabeth I had no time at all for the Puritans, and she actually employed the Catholic recusant William Byrd to compose beautiful polyphony for her chapel royal. So she, Elizabeth, if anything, was a sort of anti-Pope, anti-Roman, cafeteria Catholic. So not a Puritan. So Shakespeare knew he was safe in many ways, first of all, to lampoon Puritanism. Had to be somewhat circumspect, because it was illegal to write plays on contemporary religious and political issues. So anything too overt would be subject to censorship or even being banned. And Ben Jonson was actually sent to prison for writing a play that lampooned Elizabeth's court. So Shakespeare had to be careful. But nonetheless, Malvolio is one of the most obvious of the Puritan characters. He's humourless. He dresses very drably until he's fooled into wearing outrageously bright clothes in pursuit of his vain desire to marry the beautiful Countess Olivia. So again, in Shakespeare's play, the Merchant of Venice, Shylock the Jew would have been seen to Shakespeare's audience as Shylock the Puritan. Only Calvinists, in other words, only Puritans, were permitted to be money lenders, usurers in Elizabethan England. Usury was condemned by the Catholic Church and frowned upon indeed by Elizabeth's own government, but tolerated by the Calvinists. John Calvin actually permitted the practice of usury. So again, that Shylock is euphemistically a Jew, but to his audience would have been seen, if you like, as a thinly veiled Puritan. Malvolio, again, this Puritan character. So let's go. So again, this is why context is important, by the way, and reading a text without context, what I sometimes call the sola scriptura error in reading literature, is that we bring to it our own pride and prejudice, and the own pride and prejudice of our own day, rather than the viewpoint of the author and his audience. and his readership in the case of something that's not a play. So this understanding of Malvolio and how Malvolio would have been seen by Shakespeare's audience and by Shakespeare himself is crucial, because one of the things that we find is that Malvolio, the treatment of Malvolio, has turned him in the eyes of many critics into a victim. And that's not at all the way that things are meant to be seen. Shakespeare and his audience knew that if the Puritans, if the Malvolios of this world had their way, the arts would be shut down, cancelled, an earlier cancel culture, that the theatre would be closed down, that music would be banned from the liturgy and indeed beyond that. When the Puritans did come to power, only 40 or so years after this this play was written, they not only beheaded the king, they banned Christmas. It was such a tyrannical, pure tyrannical is what I sometimes call it, such a pure tyrannical regime that when 15 years after 15 years of that sort of regime under Cromwell and his cohorts, everybody was in favour of the restoration of the monarchy. They'd had enough of this experiment in barbarism. Okay, so I think at this point, this background, I'm already almost at 12 minutes here. What I want to do is to basically look at the characters and the plot in some detail. And I haven't even started. So that being so, I am going to desist from going on, because this is an obvious break. We've had the background, the context, historical context, the cultural context, the religious context, and especially the introduction of the most important character in the play from the point of view of its perennial relevance, and that's Malvolio the Puritan. Malvolio, of course, meaning ill will, or evil will, if you prefer. On that note, we'll finish this week's Homes Where the Hearth Is podcast, and do join me next week as we have part two of our discussion of Shakespeare's play Twelfth Night. Till then, goodbye and God bless.